The Parsha of Toldos begins with Toldos, and we'll see the Pasuk, and we'll see the Rashi, and then we'll see what there is to say, or some of what there is to say. So the Pasuk reads, Be'ele Toldos Yitzhak ben Avram, these are the generations, that is to say, the sons, the descendants of Yitzhak, the son of Avram. Avram holides Yitzhak. Avram begat Yitzhak. Now the well-known and oft-quoted Rashi on this opening pasuk deals with the seeming redundancy and doubling over of expressing the relationship between Yitzhak and Avram. Yitzhak is the son of Avram. Avram begat Yitzhak. I mean, those are two ways of saying the same thing. And in fact, most people, if you would ask them, would tell you that that is the first Rashi in Toldos, because the actual first Rashi is so short, it's very easy almost to miss it. And let's take a look at that one. So Rashi says, Ve'ele Toldos Yitzchak, Yaakov ve'Esav ha'amurim beparsha. Yaakov and Esav, who are said or spoken about in the parsha. And it's one of those Rashis where it's so simple, it's disturbing. Because, firstly, the question will always be, what does Rashi mean to say by this? Is he in any way helping us, resolving an issue, answering a question? After all, had Rashi not said anything and someone asked us, what is the reference of Eile Toldos Yitzhak ben Avram? We would have said, Yaakov Esav. So for once, we would have been able to say what Rashi says, but that makes it all the more difficult that Rashi says it. And what is he telling us when he says that Toldos Yitzchak are Yaakov and Yosef? And what makes it more difficult is that Rashi doesn't only say Yaakov Esav, which we could have worked out, but says Yaakov Esav ha'amurim beparsha. Yaakov and Esav, who are spoken about in the parsha. And that is now doubly difficult, because firstly, there are no other Yaakov and Esav to speak of, and it's quite obvious that Yaakov and Esav are spoken about in the parsha. So Bekitzer, the Rashi has four words, and it just gets more and more difficult as it goes on. And then it's over. And what is the goal of this comment of Rashi? So the Maskil David, the classic Perush on Rashi from Rabbi David Pardo, explains that Rashi is actually coming to address what might be considered a problem. And that is, the Pasuk does say, Ve'ele Toldos Yitzhak ben Avram, introducing the sons of Yitzhak, then goes on to say, Avram begat Yitzhak, which is okay, and then seemingly digresses. Because it then tells us how old Yitzhak was when he got married, and where Rivka was from, and that they didn't have children, and then there was trouble by Yisrotzitzu, and then Rivka asked a question, and it's about five or six psukim until Yaakov and Esav are actually born, and therefore it's actually not so straightforward, because if you introduce something, you should then mention it, as opposed to introducing something and then digressing and then in the fullness of time come back to it. And that is the difficulty that Rashi is addressing. And that's why he says, almost one could say reassuringly, Ve'ele told us Yitzhak, and you'd expect to find them mentioned straight away, and Yitzhak's children are not mentioned straight away. Nonetheless, or to that end, Rashi comes and reassures us and says the reference is to none other than Yaakov Esav, ha'amurim b'parsha, that we've spoken about in the parsha, as if to say, be patient, and they will come. Now, that's the comment of Maskil David. Rashi's just reassuring us that this will be justified soon, in a few psukim's time. But what's very interesting is, if we take a step back with regards to this comment of Rashi, we cannot help but compare it to to another well-known opening comment of Rashi, specifically with regards to Ve'ele Toldos. And the reference, of course, is to a Rashi we've already seen this year, the Rashi at the beginning of Noach, where it says Eile toldos Noach. Once again, we have that introduction, and we're waiting to be caught on the other side by telling us who Noach's sons are, which the pasuk doesn't immediately do. Rather, it says Eile toldos Noach, and then says Noach was a tzaddik, and then the next pasuk says that Noach had three sons. And Rashi is very involved there. I mean, Rashi reacts, and in fact offers no less than two perushim as to explain why the pasuk did this. And it's the well-known comment of Rashi. The first thing Rashi says is, in case you're wondering why it is that the Torah introduced Noah's children and then spoke about Noah, which seems very unusual. So Rashi says, firstly, it's a concept of Zeche Tzadik Livracha. He mentioned a tzaddik, so then speak in his praise, as we discussed at length. Or alternatively, says Rashi, when it says Eile toldos Noach, it really is justifying it straight away, because Noach ish tzaddik is toldos Noach, to teach you that the ikar toldosim shel tzaddikim ma'aseh matovim. And when we hold up these two comments of Rashi next to each other, they couldn't be more different, even though they're seemingly addressing exactly the same question. Namely, you start with Eile toldos someone, you do not immediately say what the toldos are, and see how differently Rashi reacts in the two cases. In Parshas Noach, he's up in arms. Eile toldos Noach, who knew, where are they? The next pasuk, well, why didn't? What's in between and why? And Rashi is not satisfied until he's offered two perushim. And then a few parshas later, you have exactly the same thing. And Rashi says, Eile toldos Noach, it's okay, don't worry, it's Yaakov and Esav, they'll be here soon, a few psukim, it's okay. You know, what's a few psukim between friends? That's what Rashi is saying. So why did Rashi get so makel? Why is he so easygoing, so to speak, in parshas toldos? And he wouldn't be equally lenient with the case of Noach. And I believe that perhaps the answer is quite simple. And that is, the two parshas begin in a very similar way. Noah starts Eile toldos Noach. Toldos starts Eile toldos Yitzhak. But the difference between them is, as introductions to a parsha, who is the parsha really about? Parshas Noach is about Noach. His sons feature there, but it's not about them, clearly. And because that's true, if the parsha is about Noach, but your opening pasuk introduces his sons, so we'll want to hear about them straight away, because it's not an introduction to the parsha, because the parsha is not about his sons, it's about him. So if you introduce them, they'll need to be mentioned straight away. And if they're even half a pasuk too late, you'll need to explain it. Eile toldos Noach, if you're talking about his children, tell me who they are straight away. And if you don't, Rashi comments. But when it comes to our parsha, the parsha is about, well, it's about Yitzhak a lot, but it's equally about Yaakov and Esav. They are prime protagonists within the parsha. And because that's true, then Eile toldos Noach, Eile toldos Yitzhak, which introduces the children of Yitzhak, is really introducing the parsha. And because that's the case, it's acceptable, because in a sense this introductory parsha, it arches over the balance of the parsha, which means if you don't tell me who they are straight away, it's okay. You've introduced generally, and it's fine to build up, because the parsha is about Toldos Yitzchak. Noach is not about Toldos Noach, it's about Noach. But Toldos is about Toldos Yitzchak, and therefore it's acceptable for the Torah to take its time, so to speak, to introduce them until we finally find out who they are. One could almost say, although it's an interesting shaila as to who decided what the names of the parshas are. We all know them by the same name. Sometimes people have somewhat different names, but generally it's more or less universal. But it's interesting that parshas Noach and Toldos, as we mentioned, they begin almost identically. Noach begins Eile toldos Noach. Toldos begins Ve'eile toldos Yitzchak. And the name of the first one, Eile toldos Noach, is Noach. And the name of the second one, Ve'eile toldos Yitzchak, is Toldos. that seems asymmetrical, because if you tell me, if you go for the first distinctive name, then as surely as Eilat Toldos Noach is called Parshas Noah, so Eilat Toldos Yitzchak should be called Parshas Yitzchak. And if that sounds unusual, it's only because we've never said it before. But it makes sense in terms of what we're looking for. And you can't say, well, you know, you can't call both of them Toldos because Noah came first. So Noach should chapter told us, and then with Yitzhak you have no choice, so to speak. So it's interesting that as much as they begin with the same words, but you can see, in a sense, where does the title of the Parsha gravitate to? It gravitates to the one who the Parsha is about. And therefore, even though Noah starts Eilat Toldos Noach, it's called Noach because it's about Noach. Whereas our Parsha is called Toldos Yitzhak because it's about his Toldos, Yaakov Esav, equally. And that may not only explain for us the difference between Rashi's comments there and here. There he's so exacting, and here he's so easygoing, so to speak. But moreover, that's why Rashi adds, by way of further explaining, Eilat Toldos Yitzchak, says Rashi, Yaakov Esav ha'amurim b'parsha. What does ha'amurim b'parsha mean? Literally, it means who are spoken about in the parsha. As if to say, Rashi isn't merely coming to say that the Yaakov, who was told this, it's like, you'll see them soon enough, they'll be mentioned soon enough. The word for being mentioned is muskarim. Lahaskir is to mention. Rashi doesn't say that Yaakov and Esav are muskarim, the Parsha, because if they were just mentioned, we'd still have a problem, because that means the Parsha is not about them. But it is about them. And that's why Rashi says there are amurim b'parsha. They're spoken about in the Parsha. They're discussed in the Parsha because they're prime protagonists within the Parsha. And that's what allows them to be introduced by name in five or six psukim's time. So that's a very interesting comment or iun within this first Rashi, which its simplicity is actually what makes it so difficult. And that's all based on the generated by the muscular dove. And Mechayel El Chayel, if we go from one comment of Rashi to another, I'd like to move again to a well-known comment of Rashi, the prelude to Yaakov getting the brachos, which is in Perek Kaf Zayin, Pasuk Aleph. And as we'll see, also there, quite a bit to say. Perek Kaf Zayin, Pasuk Aleph. Now, the pasuk reads, "Vayhiki zaken Yitzchak." It was when Yitzchak was old. "Vatichena inav meiros." His eyes became dim. He didn't see so well. "Vayikra es Esav beno agadol." He calls Esav, his older son. "Vayomer lav beni," my son. "Vayomer lav hineini," and that begins the whole story. And life was basically never the same after that day. Perek Kaf Zayin, Pasuk Aleph. And let us see what Rashi says. Commenting, well, the Dibur is Vatichena, commenting on the fact that Yaakov, that Yitzhak did not see so well. Says Rashi, and we'll mention in advance, just for Laman HaSeder HaTov, in order that it should be ordered for us, that Rashi, in terms of the additions that we have before us, will give no less than three explanations as to what this might mean, or why this would be. And let's take them one by one. Vatichena, says Rashi, be'ashnan shel elam, with the smoke of these. Now, who are these? For here, one needs to go back to the most recently mentioned topic, which is the wedding of Esav to those two girls, Yehudis Bas Be'eri and Bas 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 Elon, and neither of them were a great source of nachas really to anyone. Pasuk Lamed Hey, Batichena Maros Ruach, the Yitzhak and the Rivka, they didn't even have the good grace to agitate Yitzhak and Rivka. It just wasn't a good situation. And moreover, the very next thing we find is that Yitzhak, he can't see. What's them married to Esav got to do with Yitzhak not seeing? Well, Rashi says, that's smichus parshius. You see the juxtaposition is that they, shahayu maktiris, it says in brackets, ma'ashnosu maktiris l'avodah zara. They used to offer their incense and they used to offer their all their avodah zara in the house. And it got into Yitzhak's eyes. They asked, by the way, what about Rivka? I mean, Rivka was also around. Apparently Rivka had been inoculated to avodah zara smoke from her youth. or even her early childhood, back in Besuel and Lavan's houses. But Yitzchak's never seen anything like it, and obviously it affects him in more ways than one. And that's what dims his eyes. That's the first perush of Rashi. Next, Dover Acher, another explanation, and it is very other. The background here, when Yitzchak was tied on the Mizbeach, and his father was going to kill him. And once again, we always have to remind ourselves, we know how it ended, but at the time, it was going to happen. At that time, the heavens opened, the Malachim saw this scene, and they're crying, and their tears fell, and they fell into Yitzhak's eyes. And that's why his eyes were dim. That's quite a comment. That's quite a peirush. It is important to note that there are some versions of Rashi. This is from the Medrash, the second comment. There are some versions of Rashi which do not have this comment. They only have the first and the third, but our versions of Rashi do, and we'll need to come back to it. Davar Acher. Thirdly, if we still have room for one more peirush. Davar Acher, kedei sheyitol Yaakov es habrachos. In order that Yaakov could take the brachas, that means Yitzchak's vision was artificially dimmed or prematurely dimmed for purposes of Yaakov taking the brachas. Now, there are one or two very important questions, and again, for the time being, we will leave the middle peirush out. We'll treat them just the first or the last. And then when we're ready, we'll kind of bring that middle one back in. But in terms of even the first and the third. So the first question is, if we just again summarize these two perushim, the first one is, Vatechena enev Meiros. What happened? The answer is, it was the agitation of the smoke of Avodah Zarah from his daughters-in-law. That's one perush. Davar Acher, says Rashi, alternatively, Kedei sheyitol Yaakov es habrachos, that Yaakov could get the brachos. Now, if we try and be particular here, we'll note that these two comments aren't really davar achers of each other. They're not alternative to each other. They're not even addressing the same thing. In fact, they could even go together. And by that I mean, the first perush of Rashi is addressing what happened, what was the cause, what made his eyes go dim, and the answer is the smoke. Another question would be, why would that happen? In order for Yaakov to get the brachos, these aren't davar achers, these aren't twin causes. One could almost say that the two could go together. One was the actual cause that precipitated it, and one was the reason why it was important that it should happen. But these are certainly not classic davar achers. A davar acher would be when the pasuk says, Hashem took Avram outside, and the question is, where is outside? Does it mean outside the tent? Does it mean outside the world? Does it mean outside his mazel? Davar acher, those are davar achers because they are alternative renditions of the same term, or of the same, whereas here, that they're very simply one kind of launches, and the other catches, in terms of comments surrounding the blindness of Yitzchak. How are they davar achers? That's an interesting Rashi question. But the truth is, there is a more urgent, shall we say, question with regards to this Rashi. And that is, Rashi is looking to explain to us what it was that caused Yitzchak's blindness. And he provides, as we will come to understand it, no less than three explanations, which is a lot for Rashi. But the question, which may begin as why would Rashi need to provide more than one explanation, will very soon become why does Rashi need to provide any explanation? And the background to the question is the basis or what was behind the blindness of Yitzchak is actually staring us in the face in the Pasuk, seemingly, because the Pasuk begins, Vayhi kizok in Yitzchak, Vatichena in Av Meraos. It was when Yitzchak was old, his eyes became dim. If those two are meant to be somehow causationally linked, and seemingly they are, then the pasuk itself is giving us the cause of his blindness, and that was old age. So it's now the Rashi now becomes very difficult, not only why it's a threefold explanation, but why there is any comment. If Rashi had not said anything, then, and we just looked at the pasuk, we would have worked out. And it makes it all the more disturbing that our conclusion would have been none of the three that Rashi says. What then is Rashi doing by coming to explain something that the pasuk has already given the reason for? That is the question. The second question. And based on certain Meforshei Rashi, I believe that when we answer this final question, we'll be able to go back to our opening question. If we look at the pasuk again, Vayihi ki zaken Yitzhak, when Yitzhak was old, although parenthetically he wasn't that old, relative to, if we compare him, for example, with Yaakov Avinu, also when it comes with Yaakov, he couldn't see. But that's mamish in the last, final stage of his life, just before he passed away with Ephraim and Menashe, etc. Yitzhak is not in the final stage of his life. Yitzhak, at this, according to the Cheshbon, right, we know how old he is, Yaakov is, he's just past 120, which for him is not the end, because he lived to be 180. So that's a stammer question. But be that as it may, the pasuk does seem to link his blindness to old age, to a degree. But the pasuk says, "Vayiki zaken Yitzhak, vatichena einav meiraos." And actually, if we read the pasuk carefully, the word that should stand out is the word meiraos, because the word meiraos literally means from seeing. And practically, therefore, it doesn't seem to add anything. Because anyone who is blind means they are blind from seeing. That's what it means to be blind. If we compare, for example, just to sharpen the resolution of the question, if we compare what the pasuk says with regards to Moshe Rabbeinu, who it says that his vision did not dim, right? That's famously at the end of Parshas, his eye didn't dim. And it's a good point of contrast, because it doesn't say it's the same verb, the same everything, but means for eyes to dim, means you can't see. And therefore, it's very plausible that what's actually bothering Rashi here, in addition to what the pasuk has said, "Vayiki zaken Yitzhak," but there's got to be something else, because if it's just old age, it would have said, "Vayiki zaken Yitzhak, vatichena einav." And what then is the meaning of "vatichena einav meiraos"? This is what Rashi is coming to explain, and to this he provides alternative explanations. And the reason why they're alternative explanations is because the word meiraos can mean more than one thing. Ra'os is seeing, Meiraos is from seeing, but there's more than one type of from. Even in English, lahavdil, and also in Lashon HaKodesh, as we'll see. One type of from is resulting from, A from B. Another type of from is away from. Away from something. And the difference between them is that the resulting from means whatever happens is the product of what you mentioned. Whereas away from means whatever happens is in order to avoid what you mentioned. And there's examples in Lashon HaKodesh from both, as we know. And this leads us to Rashi. You see, what Rashi is doing is the first question is Vatichena enav meiraos, and if the first mem sounds like the type of from which is resulting from, so Rashi says, well, what did it result? Meiraos therefore means resulting from seeing. His eyes became dim as a result of something that he saw. Meiraos. But what did he see? That's the question. And the answer to that, with that understanding of Meiraos, is the smoke that got into his eyes, right? From so much visual contact with that smoke. Meiraos, from seeing all of that, that's what led to Vatechena Einav. That's the first perish. But then Rashi moves to a Davar Acher. And it's true that we mentioned that it's not a Davar Acher as an alternative understanding of what's going on, but it is a Davar Acher in terms of what the word Meiraos means. Because Rashi's final words, that he should not see Yaakov get the brachas, that's a different understanding of the word Meiraos, because it means from seeing, as if to say, not resulting from seeing, but to prevent him from seeing Yaakov. in terms of the story, the two can go together. But in terms of understanding Meir Oz, they are davar acher to each other. So that's a very important discussion with regards to this Rashi. And this leads us, I would say, finally back to the middle. To the middle Peirush. So the middle Peirush, which is by far the most esoteric, and the Malachim were crying and the tears fell into his eyes. I mean, it raises questions of all sorts. Firstly, the notion of a Malach crying, what does that mean? I mean, if a Malach is a spiritual entity, then what do his tears look like? And how do they fall? And it seems like very terrible statistic unlikelihood that if they fall from that distance, neither would they evaporate, but they would not find their ways into Yitzhak's eyes. I mean, that's the last thing he needs. He's already on the Akedah, and he needs these tears in his eyes. So what does it mean for them to fall into his eyes? It's also very interesting that of all the Perushim, this has an added difficulty, because we seem to have a delayed effect of approximately of almost 90 years. And whatever happened to the Akedah, and how old is Yitzhak of the Akedah? According to Rashi, he's 37. According to Ibn Ezra and others, he's younger. And here he is, 123. I mean, that seems to be something of a delayed reaction to whatever happened. So what does it mean? Well, we need to, at this point, broaden to discuss, again, Toldos Yitzhak, the sons of Yitzhak, Yaakov and Esav. As we know, it's clear in the Parsha that Yitzhak somehow, his heart goes out to Esav. He wants to give him the brachas. Does he think that Esav is the one? Very difficult. I mean, Esav's good, but to be that good, to make him think that, to choose between that Yitzhak is the tzaddik and who's Yaakov, the non-tzaddik, difficult. An approach that many Mefarshim take is that he has no mistake as to who Yaakov is. I mean, Yaakov is Ishtam. What you see is what you get, and you see a tzaddik. But Esav, he also saw there was room for Esav, and there was hope for Esav. And he felt that he'd give him a hand. He'd help him out with the brachas. Now, that itself is a very interesting idea. The notion of Yitzhak helping someone, giving them a brachas, giving them a helping hand. Why? Because as we know, the midah of Yitzhak is midas hadin. Pachad Yitzhak, gevuras Yitzhak. That means that Yitzhak represents almost the antithesis of the notion of helping a person. Because midas hadin, basically it needs to be earned, or there's nothing. Midas hadin means there's no free lunch. And Yitzhak never asks for it, and seemingly he should never dispense it. And that's an interesting situation. So number one, how did he come to have a benign attitude towards Esav? That's number one, because midas hadin should give no quarter. And number two, that he would be even willing to help him. And the answer to this is alluded to in these words of the Medrash. And that is, when we say that Yitzhak is din, pure din, at a certain point, that is no longer true. At a certain point, even Yitzhak's outlook has a certain admixture, shall we say, of compassion and of patience. Why? Because as we mentioned a couple of weeks ago, according to pure Midas Hadin, Yitzhak would not have survived the Akedah. What seems to be from the way that Yitzhak and Avram are davening, that they shouldn't have to do the Akedah on whatever level they were, means that it was not a given. The simple understanding is that Avram somehow had forfeited Yitzhak. and therefore there was a move, in a sense, to retract or to reverse the decree of the Akedah, which happened. And that's what's alluded to by the idea of Malachim, which really represent positions from on high. When they see what's happening and they're crying, what that means is there's an outpouring of Rachamim from heaven. And it saves Yitzchak. But that's why the tears of the Malachim entered the eyes of Yitzchak. What that means is that Yitzchak can no longer, or does no longer, look at everything with pure Midas Adin, because for pure Midas Adin he shouldn't exist anymore. He exists now as a din with, tempered by Rachamim, and therefore his own outlook is tempered by Rachamim, and it found expression in the way that he looked at Esav. He was more patient with him, more forgiving of him, and more, I would say, had a more benign vision of his interpretation of what Esav, which was helped along, of course, by Esav's own deception. But the very fact that he was prepared to give him that leeway, those are the tears of the Akedah. And that's why he wanted to give the brachas to Esav. And this really brings us to an important discussion within Parshas Toldos, and that is, we talk a lot about Yaakov, but we also have to talk about Esav. Because the question is, as we know, he turned out awful, but the important question is, did he have a choice? Meaning, did he have to turn out awful? Was it predestined that he will be a bad person? Did he have a chance? That is the question. And from a certain point of view, it sounds like he didn't. Because there's well-known comments of Rashi and the Medrash that you find, from the Pasuk itself, you find, for example, that even before he's born, he's heading in the wrong direction. Rivka only needs to pass within whatever distance of a zoning distance of a house of Avodah Zarah, he's already looking to get out. I mean, that's before he's born. It doesn't sound like he's headed into a good place. And when he's born, he comes out red, he's the color of blood, and it's... Moreover, Avram has already been told that only one of Yitzchak's descendants will ultimately be the continuation of the Jewish people, or of what the Jewish people were at that time. When Hashem tells Avram that Yitzhak and Yishmael will part ways, when Sarah says, send Yishmael away, Avram doesn't want to do it. And Hashem says to Avram, listen to Sarah, because Yishmael, he's not your continuation. But the Gemara notes in Maseches Nedarim and elsewhere that the Pasuk doesn't say ki Yitzchak yikare, right, Yitzchak, but rather ki be-Yitzchak. And be means within. Someone within Yitzchak, but not all of Yitzchak. Be-Yitzchak velo kol Yitzchak. So Avram's already been told that not all of Yitzchak's children will continue in his way. And Yitzchak only has two children. And Yaakov and Esav, and it's already foretold. So what about that? Rav Gedalia Shor, in the Sefer Or Gedaliahu, so he discusses at length and explains that the truth is that Esav had a chance. And not only did Esav have a chance that he shouldn't be all that bad, Esav had a chance, there was room for him to ultimately play a role within the future of the Jewish people. He quotes a Medrash, and it's quite a shocking thing to hear from the Medrash, but the Medrash says that originally the plan was that of the 12 tribes of Israel, 6 would come from Yaakov and 6 from Esav. And that's the Medrash which is already seen out as Esav has turned out. Except he doesn't seem to have that much going for him. So how can this be? Moreover, at the beginning of the Parsha, there's a very interesting event where Rivka experiences these difficulties. She doesn't know what's happening. Right? Why am I thus? She goes to inquire of Hashem. And it must have really bothered her because she went from Hebron to Yerushalayim, which is not easy, even nowadays. And certainly not, she's having trouble with her pregnancy. So she needed to know. And the answer that Hashem gives, it has many parts to it. And commenting on the first segment, the first phrase of Hashem's response, literally, there are two nations, and they would become nations. But the Gemara in Maseches Avodah Zarah, Daf Yud Aleph, explains that this is actually an allusion The words are the words, the pshat is the pshat, and beyond that there's an allusion to two particular individuals, great individuals, that would come out from each. One from Yaakov, and one from Esau. So who is the one from Yaakov? Rebbe Yehuda Nasi. And who's the one from Esau? Antoninus. The famous Antoninus, there's a whole discussion exactly which Antoninus it was. And he was from the side of Rome, he's descended from Esau, and he's also, in his way, a great person. And therefore, Shnei Goyim Bevitnev, if we zone in on two individuals who represent Shnei Goyim Bevitnev, it's Rebbe Yehuda Nasi from Yaakov and Antoninus from Esau. And the question that the Meshech Chochma asks is, how's that an answer to Rivka's question? I mean, Rivka asks whatever she asks, and then Hashem says, you know, in the future, there's going to be Rebbe Yehuda Nasi, and there's going to be Antoninus, and there you go. Everything else should be more or less self-explanatory. But how does that function as the answer to her question? So the truth of the matter is, says Meshech Chochma, if we wish to appreciate how Rebbe and Antoninus are the answer to her question, we really need to take a closer look at her question itself, because it's also phrased kind of cryptically. Because again, the words are, Vayisrotz Tzabon and Bekirba, there's trouble, agitation, Vatoma Imkein, and she says, if so, Lama Ze Anochi, which literally means, why is this me? Or why is it me? Or why am I thus? And what does she mean by that? It's rather vague. And Meshech Chochma explains, as we know, what the Avos set in motion was essentially, one could say, a three-stage process of refining the Jewish people. It's a process, it began with Avram, it didn't end with Avram, and it didn't end with Yitzchak. It began with Avram, went through to Yitzchak, and finally through to Yaakov. And what's happening? What's happening is that Avram begins to pull away from everyone else, he begins to refine himself and to perfect himself, and he reaches a certain level, and then within him there is yet a mixture. And that mixture finds expression as it's one is separated from the other in the next generation. Because you have Yitzchak on the one hand and Yishmael on the other hand. And Yitzchak catches all that which is good, and Yishmael catches that which is not so good. And that represents a parting of the ways, and Avram is further refined within Yitzchak. But the refining process is not yet complete, because Yitzchak himself then, together with Rivka, begets another generation where they go in two different paths, and Esav takes off what's left of, to use a simplifying terminology, of what is impure, and leaving Yaakov. And then the Avos are done, and then the Jewish people can be launched. So that means that from a certain point of view, whoever's going to come out from Rivka, that is to say Yaakov and Esav, will be another stage of what happened with Yitzhak and Yishmael. And she's already receiving indications that the two are going in very different directions. Because Vayisrotzu Habonim Bekirba. It would be nice if the process is finished. Maybe it is. But if it is, then why is there trouble when she passes by a house of Avodah Zarah, and then other trouble when she passes by a Beis HaMedrash? Right? If there are two, and each one gets excited that opposite conflicting prospects, that means that they have different tendencies. They have conflicting tendencies. So now she knows it's another round. It's another round of separating the pure from the impure. So what is her question? Her question is, if this is going to be another stage of that process, so why is it me? And what she means by that is, because in stage number one, the two sons, I mean, they both come from Avram, but they're carried by different mothers. In other words, it's an absolute separation, because the mother who bears Yishmael is not the mother who bears Yitzchak. They're separated literally from that earliest point, because they're so different from each other. And it's absolutely moved to the side, whatever Yishmael is, whatever he represents, leaving Yitzchak. So now Rivka's question is, as strange as what the implications might be, But if this is another stage of that, so then why are they both in me? That's the question. Why isn't there another Hagar? If there's going to be another Yishmael coming out, so why isn't there another Hagar who carries him? I'm carrying both. That's a question. Lama ze anochi? And Meshach Chochma explains that Hashem's answer to her is Shnei Goyim Bevitneich. And Shnei Goyim Bevitneich, as the Gemara explained, does not only mean there are two nations, but we single out two personalities. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, the great, and Antoninus. And what does Antoninus represent? Antoninus was a very high quality person, and he had the greatest of respect for Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, and he learned with him, and he even ministered to him, and he represents almost like the best of Esav. It's a long time in coming, but the best of Esav. In fact, from a certain point of view, one could say that Antoninus and Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, they represent almost the way that Yaakov and Esav could have been, or should have been. And it doesn't happen straight away. In the end, it won't happen straight away. But it happens with Rebbe and Antoninus. And that's really what Hashem is saying to Rivka. The reason why Esav is within you, if all it was Esav and all the bad will come from him, you wouldn't be carrying him. But he himself is carrying something. And for that purposes, you're carrying Esav as well. For people like Antoninus. And there were others like Antoninus as well. Very interesting explanation of Meshech Chochma. There is an implication, by the way, which unfortunately is actually very easy for us to relate to, and that is that there are no such personalities to be expected to come from Yishmael, even in the future. And indeed, we haven't really had any stellar progeny from Rabbi Yishmael in the way that you had Antoninus and Rabbi Meir and others. So Yishmael can go completely to Hagar. There's no Yishmael doesn't need to be carried by Sarah for the benefit of anyone else. They can always be Geirim, but it's a different dynamic. But according to our discussion, we may say that, again, clearly unlike Yishmael, who was deleted from the program, absolutely, but if Esav had a chance to be in the program, then not only for the future, but also for his own future, for the chance, it was appropriate to be carried by Rivka, because he could have actually been in the program. But how? Our question is, he's blood red, and he's like Avodah Zarah. I mean, what type of future is that? Clearly, the answer is that Esav and Yaakov, even if they would be both part of the program, they would not have the same roles. Esav would be much more temporal. Esav would be much more in this world. And moreover, his struggles would be struggles of this world. And whatever that involves, including a violent temper and tendencies towards all sorts of things that he shouldn't do. But that doesn't mean hope is lost. That means that's his struggle. Whereas Yaakov is more perfecting the more elevated and spiritual pursuits. And you need both. And we do need both. Well, to sum up, one could say that Esav's, his primary realm would be Sur Meirah, and Yaakov would be Aseto, and we need Sur Meirah, Aseto. I heard a fascinating comment as walking back with a colleague from Shul on Friday night, just to express what this means. As we know, a very important event, pivotal, in Yaakov's own life is when he comes back, he's about to meet Esav, and he wrestles with and that Sarah shall Esav's angels, and it's good against evil, and he's fighting with him on some spiritual plane, and he vanquishes him. He takes a hit, but he vanquishes him. And that's Yaakov, and then he's called Yisrael. So this colleague said that fight should have taken place between Esav and Esav's angel. Not Yaakov and Esav's angel. In other words, if he's Esav's angel, that means that Esav has this spiritual input towards evil. That's his struggle. He should have been the one fighting with Sarashal Esav. But he abdicated. So now Esav needs to take on Esav's fight. Very interesting. But all business is not resolved. Because here we are saying that Esav could have been part of the future of the Jewish people if he'd only overcome his tendencies and succeeded in the struggles. But what about that which is already told to Avram? Abraham's already been told, Yishmael's out, Esav is out, right? Ki v'Yitzchak, right? Yitzchak and not Yishmael, b'Yitzchak and not Kol Yitzchak. So the Or Gedaliah says, and it's a very delicate idea, but very, very profound. There is a difference between the exclusion of Yishmael and the exclusion of Esav. The exclusion of Yishmael could not be clearer. Yitzchak means Yitzchak and not Yishmael. Yishmael can go, because Yitzchak yikar lechazara. That could not be clearer. But then there's something else, and that's called b'Yitzchak. Now, b'Yitzchak, it depends how you read it, and it depends what you do with it. There's room for an inference there. There's room for the notion that b'Yitzchak v'lo kol Yitzchak. Maybe not everyone with Yitzchak will make it. Maybe not. But it's a very different message. It is less unequivocal than, say, Yitzchak and not Yishmael. And the point is that the nuanced understanding of what Avram is being told is that Yishmael is absolutely out, and only Yitzchak, and within Yitzchak, it depends. In other words, because it takes the form, the exclusion of Esav takes the form of an inference, it's not as definite, it's not as irrevocable, but rather what it's saying is, if nature takes its course, one of his children will also be headed out. But that's his struggle. That's his tachlis. And therefore, if Esav had come good, there's 10 other ways to read the word, the base of Ki B'Yitzchak. That's really what the Or Gedaliah was saying. So it's very interesting, even as things are foretold, and we're always sensitive to, you know, pshat, and then drash, and inference, and plain meaning, etc. But even as messages come in from on high, it also makes a difference. Is it the pshat? Is it the drash? Is it a diuk? Is it an inference? Is it black and white? Is it plainly stated? Etc. And in fact, this is an idea which is already to be found, the infrastructure for this idea, in the words of the Maharal. Moshe is quite clear that even in Chumash Bamidbar, until he hit the rock, or until whatever happened with the rock, Moshe was quite confident that he was going into Eretz Yisrael together with everyone else. He says to Yisro, No semanachnu, we are traveling. And Rashi says, Kasavor shunichna simon. He thought he's going in with them. Why not? I mean, nothing's gone wrong yet. But the problem is, Moshe has already received a message that he will not be going in. And that is as early as the end of Chum Aparshas Shemos, when he comes back and complains. And although, as we always say, he complains because he feels the pain of the Jewish people at the end of Parshas Shemos. The first meeting went badly, but on his level, he was yet criticized for doubting and not being patient enough and with Hashem to arrange things as he saw fit. And therefore Hashem says to him, Ata tireh, with an ayin, final pasuk of Parshas Shemos, Ata tireh, now you will see that which I'll do for Paro. And Rashi himself comments, Ata, sounds like now, but not later. Yes, says Rashi. Now you'll see what I'll do to Paro. But later on, you will not be seeing what I'll do to the 31 kings of Canaan. So now the question is, if according to Rashi, Moshe was already told, based on Atatira, that he will not be seeing what's going on in Canaan, why then does Rashi himself tell us that when Moshe says, No semanachnu in Chumash Bamidbar to Yisro, he thinks he's going with them. He didn't learn the Rashi in the Parsha Shemos. But the Maharal says, Moshe gets the message. And the message is you're not going in as a result of complaining, etc. Even complaining lishma, as we would say. But it's an inference. It's a diuk. It's an inferred message, an implied message. Atatira, now you'll see. Meaning, there's an inference there, now and not later. Because it's inferred, but not explicitly stated, Moshe gets the message, but that is not set in stone. That's something that Moshe feels, that if he can overcome that, he can overturn it, that is to say, he can revoke it. It's only when Hashem says, you are not going in, Parshas Chukas, even then Moshe davens, but it's a very different time. He doesn't think he's going in anymore. He can pray that it shouldn't happen, but he doesn't think he's going in anymore. And once again, you see from the words of the Maharal himself, Atatira, and you're not going in. Ultimately, they head in the same direction, but one of them is black and white, and the other is an inference. And there are different levels of irrevocability of the Gezeira. And so too, back to our Parsha, Yitzchak and not Yishmael is Yitzchak and not Yishmael. There's no two ways about that. But the Yitzchak, to exclude Esav, that can yet be maneuvered around. And that's really, one could almost say that Esav's mission was to give us a different way of understanding what the base of Ki B'Yitzchak means. And moreover, says the Rav Gedalia Shor, that brings us back to the beginning of Parshas Toldos. Ve'eile Toldos Yitzchak ben Avram. And Rashi says, Yaakov Esav ha'amurim beparsha, as if to say, this is the original plan. Ve'eile Toldos, both of them are Toldos, together, of Yitzchak ben Avram, with all that goes with that. Yaakov Esav ha'amurim beparsha. That was the plan. However, as we know, that plan was not realized. And Esav did not rise to the occasion, but rather he invested much more in developing the negative tendencies, etc. And that is why Rivka and Yitzchak now have drastically different views of understanding what should happen with Esav and with Yaakov. But from the outset, there's something about Esav, he could have been there. And in fact, as a Meforshim point out, we have an amazing Mesorah, it's a Gemara Naseches Sota. Maraseh Machpelah is home to very important personalities for us. Adam and Chava, the Medrash says, Avram and Sarah, Yitzhak and Rivka, Yaakov and Leah. And if you know the Gemara, so it's home to eight and a bit. Because included there is Esav's head. And the background to that is when they came to bury Yaakov, and Esav finds the time to turn up, and he complains, and he says this place is for him, and they're negotiating, and as we know, Chushim ben Dan, who's not really part of the whole proceedings because he can't hear. So everyone else is kind of getting more and more enmeshed in negotiations, except for Chushim, who can't hear anyone. But at a certain point, he does notice that the Levi is being held up. So he asks, my high, what's going on? And they tell him, and he hears the whole thing, therefore, instantly, the whole uproar. It didn't happen gradually for him. It was Yosef, with Esav, Shalom Aleichem, what are you doing here, etc. It wasn't a gradual thing. It was so abrupt, he reacted as anyone would if they heard the whole thing straight away. He took the way the Gemara describes, he took a pole, he knocked Esav, and knocked his head off. However the logistics of that worked. And Esav's head then rolled into Maraseh Machpelah. So it's a rather incongruous occupant of Maraseh Machpelah when you consider the other company. Except the point is that no, the head representing the beginning or the ideal of Esav has its place in Maraseh Machpelah, because that represents the initial plan, that he should have been part of the program. From the neck downwards, it didn't work out. And therefore, Rivka sees this, and as we often say, she sees it more clearly than Yitzchak, because she grows up with professionals, with Lavan. Yitzchak is inclined to give Esav more of a chance, and there's no reconciling. And therefore, Rivka takes her alternative route to get Yaakov the brachas, and in so doing, she ultimately has Yaakov now take on the role that Esav would have played. That's the point. As if to say, as surely as we say, six of the tribes would have come from Esav and six from Yaakov. But if Esav has abdicated, Yaakov needs to take on both roles, and that's why now all 12 come from him, and that's why he needs the brachas. That means Rivka has a deeper insight or more accurate insight in terms of not only the nature of Esav who will squander the brachas, but the nature of Yaakov who needs the brachas, certainly in terms of his new role. If he takes on that capacity, he needs the brachas. And it's very interesting the way that it happens is that he has this whole, through instructions for Rivka, he's not so happy with it, but she tells him he has to organize the brachas in a way. It's not straightforward. And he presents himself as Esav, etc. It's not straightforward. I heard once that Rav Kook said that this, in a sense, was almost like his inauguration into the world of Esav. Because if he needs to take on Esav's role, he needs to know how to handle himself, so to speak, in the world. And therefore, it took a rather specific form of he's Esav, etc. And aside from all the particulars, but to do so in such a kind of a gritty way, it's because he needs to roll up his sleeves a little bit and take on that wish of Esav, which is acceptable in this particular case. It's interesting that the pasuk says, when Yitzhak found out that it was really Yaakov that pretended to be Esav, he confirms the bracha. Gam baruch yeh. That was even worse for Esav. It's one thing to be tricked by Yaakov, but then Yitzhak confirms it. But part of why Yitzhak confirms it is because Yitzhak saw that he didn't really see that in Yaakov. He didn't know that Yaakov could do anything like that. But now he saw that he did. He succeeded in getting the brachas from him in a very olam hazeh type of way. And so Yitzhak, Gam baruch yeh is basically saying, good gechapt. He did well. And then when Yaakov goes to Lavan, and he goes now, he needs to go out into the world more. Until now he's been Yoshe Vaholim, but if he's going to be part of if it's going to be the whole of the future of the Jewish people, so he needs to take on Esav's role, so he needs to now deal with people like Lavan and be more in the world in that way. And that's why he ends up marrying Rachel and Leah. Leah, strangely, but we know from Chazal, she was meant to marry Esav. Except, why? That seems completely unfair. But the point is that she was meant to marry Esav. Had Esav become part of the program, there would have been two avos and two imahos. But when Esav abdicates, and Yaakov takes over both, that's why Yaakov marries both Rachel and Leah. There's a very interesting medrash. There's so much to ponder in all of these statements, the words of Chazal, many, many levels. But Yaakov was upset with Leah on the morning after, because he said, you tricked me. Your father's a trickster, you're a trickster. And Leah says to him, well, you're a trickster, because you tricked your father into giving you the brachas. So it sounds like everyone's just calling each other a trickster. But really what it means is that Yaakov says to Leah, it's not right for you to be married to me. I mean, that's dishonest, because I'm with Rachel and whatever, and you're, I guess, for someone else. But she says, no, I'm not for someone else. I'm for you. Because in tricking your father in the way that you had to, and told by your mother, etc. and so forth, so you've demonstrated that you are taking on that role of the Jewish people, in which case, I'm part of your household. And that was Leah's message to Yaakov. So that, of course, segues us into Parshas Vayetze. Much to speak about Mitzvah Hashem next week, but we'll leave it over there for the time being.